Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we have a finalized roster. Islanders are going to play a game on Thursday that counts. We got some new broadcast partners, and actually a bunch of games have already been played. So what are we talking about? Hockey is upon us, and it's time to get officially hyped for the next season.
Yeah, definitely excited and scared and everything you feel in the beginning of the season. We'll talk a lot about the Islanders' expectations because this is definitely a different, first everyone has a blank slate, but usually when you hear that cliche and you're an Islander fan, like that was always associated with, yep, everyone's got a blank slate, but this is not going to go well by Thanksgiving. I'm sure that we'll be out of it. But now it's, the expectations are just so different. Not just here, obviously, and around how the rest of the world perceives us. And a lot of it, I guess, is with how they kind of did just finalize the roster, which was with these kind of, I don't want to call them shrewd, but like the paper moves that Lou was making is he's playing, checkers and everyone else is playing chess or whatever. And I was just cracking up thinking about the calling like the NHL league office and Lou just being like, all right, so here's what we're doing today. We got this guy, Jacob Skarik. Who? Yeah. Just don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just he's going to be on the team right now and then tomorrow. But it's like that kind of stuff that like just to get so close to the cap so they can maximize Johnny Boychuk's long-term injury reserve and whatever. Like those kind of things, those little attention to detail kind of things. That's what in a league where the margins are so thin, those things really do kind of count more than you notice until you're the one that are you're the team that's doing them. So
another cliche is timing is everything, and that's the way this works because it's the way the salary cap is. Things change every single day, and like you said, they want to maximize that long-term injured reserve time, and everybody does this kind of stuff. So it's about putting Johnny Boychuk on long-term injured reserve at the very last moment and moving stuff around in his availability today. Lou got asked by Arthur Staple about the dance, so to speak, of putting these guys, on here and then and putting them on waivers and then sending them to Bridgeport and then signing them contracts. So today, the Islanders finally signed Kiefer Bellows and Corey Schneider to contracts. They hadn't been on contracts this whole time. I'm pretty sure they were the last two. I think Michael Dal Colle signed, I believe, yesterday because he was on waivers on Monday. Matt Martin and Semyon Varlamov are technically on IR. And in Martin's case, it might be a little bit. So when he comes off IR, which I mean, might as well be after, before you even listen to this on Thursday, Leo Komarov probably most likely to go on waivers, maybe somebody else. And as we've talked about ad nauseum for weeks now, the Islanders have a big long road trip to start the season. So, they're going to bring multiple people. Lou said they're down to 25 now. Look for a second like Jacob Skarik was going to be the third goalie, but he was never going to be the third goalie. He's down at Bridgeport now. Thomas Hickey is down at Bridgeport. Corey Schneider is the third goalie, probably going to back up Ilya Sorokin on Thursday. Again, Dal Colle is down in Bridgeport now too. So, and Robin Salo, I believe, is as well, but Sebastian Aho is with the Islanders right now. So, which is exciting. So we have a finalized roster and it's about, there's not a whole lot of surprises, I guess, particularly on the guys that are going to play. But it is cool to look at that roster and be like, yep, this is the guys. And Lou said in his thing, this is the deepest team we've ever had here. And, I can't disagree. It's hard to disagree when you look at the lineup. And they are apparently the oldest team in the NHL this year. So, which again, shouldn't be a surprise, but yeah. So, you know, now you can look at it and be like, these are the guys that we're going with.
I really enjoyed the time that Kiefer Bellows spent in purgatory, where he wasn't on the team, but also wasn't a free agent. Like, I don't know how that worked, but him and Corey Schneider were in this weird purgatory. But it all ended up going according to their plan. I really wonder if you had asked before training camp, like when you saw the training camp roster with guys like Eric Gustafson and when they signed like Paul Ledoux and whatever, if you would ask me like who on this list like is going to be here or not. I guess it was kind of obvious who it would be. I think the only ones that were kind of up for grabs maybe would it be Dal Colle as the extra forward, or would it be Bellows or whatever. And but other than that, it seemed pretty status quo. It's just the way that they got here,
right,
was had to do with a lot of paper moves and stuff. And it really was interesting. I feel bad for guys, you know, for the beat writers trying to figure it out, and for like cap friendly and stuff. But
yeah,
it seemed that this was the plan all along. And I guess that Eric Gustafson, I don't know if Lou's shackles were removed when he signed with another team, so he could kind of be blunt and say what happened. And he said that he had a good camp and they just couldn't sign him because of cap space. So, you know, maybe that they were trying to shed some salary to get him under the umbrella. But aside from that, I think this was probably the group that was always going to be the 23 or 25 man roster, because Lou's allowed to have a 25 man roster. I like how he answered that question too. He's like, "Yep, we got 25 people here. Not gonna. I'll explain to you why, but you know, just a little wrinkle. But yeah, I guess this would probably be the roster that they were planning on bringing all along. And it feels like guys not really Parisi as much, because his signing got overshadowed by Chara, but it already feels like Zdeno Chara has been here forever, because the way he's done a little. He's the only Islander allowed to do media hits outside of the organization, because he's got loose trust, I guess. But other than that, I feel like the Parisi is like, I'm really still excited. Like the shine hasn't worn off Chara at all. Like I'm not saying that, but like I feel like we just haven't seen. I haven't really been able to, and this is partly because I don't really watch preseason games. Haven't really watched. And seeing Parisi in action, and the snippet I did see, I got such crazy, flashback to Lubo Viznovsky, because he's wearing the 11 and they're they're maybe the same exact size and they skate similarly. And I was like, oh no, is that Lubo out there? Where am I?
That's funny. But
I think he's kind of the guy I'm most excited to watch play tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Before I get to Parisi, I'm glad you brought up Gustafson, because I thought it was really funny that the Islanders had him in camp. And, you know, despite, again, signing Chara and having a bunch of other guys already on the lineup, you know, it seemed like a pretty decent gamble to have this guy in the PTO. He's known as sort of a power play guy. And I think most Islanders fans were sort of like, okay, this is an intriguing wrinkle here. I mean, I don't know. Let's see where this goes. And he played a lot in the preseason, and he looked okay. I mean, he was active out there. He didn't look like he was kind of, you know, struggling to pick up Barry Trotz's system, so to speak, in the few days that he was here. And, you know, as the days went on, it was like, well, I guess they haven't signed him because they got so many guys and they got to, again, walk through all these hoops and do all this stuff. And eventually, within a span of like 5 minutes, he's released from the Islanders PTO and he signs with Chicago, which is where he started from. And the funniest thing to me is I follow a bunch of Blackhawks fans, mostly from the blog Faxes from Uncle Dale. And, you know, they have a podcast and stuff. Some of them used to write for Second City Hockey at SB Nation. And their response to the Blackhawks signing Gustafson was like, oh, great. This guy again. Get out of here. Like, come on. Really? This is the guy. Like it was like a big wet fart noise. Whereas Islanders fans were sort of like, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. So I just thought it was really funny that, like,
yeah, you know, it was a funny saga too. Obviously that Islanders Twitter handle, Isles Legend, was just great timing putting up the picture of him. And the whole situation is definitely one that, you know, if this show goes on past two seasons from now, three seasons from now, we'll be talking about Eric Gustafson a lot. He's definitely someone that we'll be talking about. Yeah. Plenty. But I, in, in one way too, I was also kind of pleased that he left, just because, you know, you and me, everybody who listens to the show, basically anybody who's attached to the Islanders anyway, we all love Thomas Hickey, and I'm just happy that he's still kind of around. And I just don't really, I think that there's a pretty good chance that he plays, I mean, I'm not gonna say he's a significant role, like he's not gonna be playing 60 games this season, but the fact that he's, it seems like he'll be the next man up to backfill for Aho if Aho goes in was kind of heartwarming in a very weird way. It's weird that I'm so excited because for the number nine defenseman, like I'm like, oh, look at Hickey getting the number nine spot on the team. It's not like I'm not trying to pander or anything, but I'm just happy he's still with us and not, you know, in another organization. Cause it would be sad if whenever that day comes where he does go somewhere else. And
yeah.
Cause you know, this team is still a contender, and it would be nice for him to be someone who contributes to that. Unlike he did last year. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. He can. I think they definitely like having him around, and I feel like he might not really mind that much his role, but maybe he does. I don't even know. But yeah, I don't know. I have this crazy idea, and I'm probably going to be totally wrong, but I have this crazy idea that you're going to see guys like Aho and Hickey and maybe even Salo play a little bit this season. Cause I mean, again, let's be honest, Chara and Green, they're in great shape, but they are on the older side of things. Guys get hurt, you know, things change. We'll have to see, you know, how things operate, but I have a feeling we're going to see Thomas Hickey, the man of 1,000 uniform numbers, play again for the Islanders this year at some point. But the thing about Parisi that you brought up, I did watch the preseason games, and again, I thought he looked okay. But my worry about him is that, you know, for years and years and years, we've wanted the Islanders to not have to play Leo Komarov in big spots. Like, let's just be honest. Like, Leo is a guy as valuable as he is inside that locker room. And if you go to the Islanders website, there's a season preview and they kind of go player by player. And my favorite part was when they got to Leo and they talked about, they basically were just like, look, we know that he irritates you fans, but he's important to the team. And mainly because he was sort of the translator, or at least the conduit by which both Atu Ratti and Anatoly Golishev were able to communicate better with their teammates. One guy from Finland, one guy from Russia, and then there's Leo in the middle, kind of, you know, facilitating the communication.
The Estonian. Yeah.
He's like C-3PO for the locker room. Like, yeah. He's able to speak 7 billion languages and just sort of, you know, interpret, but he's also incredibly irritating. But in any event,
I was watching I watch a lot of like YouTube documentaries, like about like World War One and stuff. And it just recommended this channel to me a couple of weeks ago called Bald and Beautiful. And it's some guy who travels around by himself to post Soviet states and like goes into like kind of like, you know, the dodgier parts of them. And I was watching one last night and he was in Estonia.
Mm.
And so of course I'm like, there's no way that this is, he's in like Eastern Estonia, right on the Russia border. Like there's a part in the video where he looks over the river and he's like, that's Russia. There's two fortresses facing each other. He's like, that's an Estonian fortress. That's a Russian fortress. They're literally a river apart from each other. Mm. And I'm like, there's no way that this is where Leo's from. And it was, he's from Narva, Estonia. Like, wow. I think it's called Narva, like right on the Russian border. I'm like, this is, of course that this is exactly where he's from. Because it's like, influenced by Soviet, you know, Russia, and also kind of like Eastern Baltic Europeans. So yeah, that makes sense. Like this place kind of looks like Leo a little bit and has the same sense of humor.
He was molded in it, born in it, molded by it, you know, whatever the whole thing. But I just thought that was really funny that this is Leo's true function here is to translate between different cultures in the locker room. But the reason I bring up Leo in talking about Parisi is because my fear is that if Parisi doesn't put the puck in the net, I have a feeling that the good vibes that we're kind of getting from his signing still to this day, because I agree with you, I'm still excited to see him there. I feel like those can go disappear in a heartbeat. And I don't have like a time frame, like if he has, you know, one goal before Thanksgiving or something like that, it would be bad. But I do feel like, you know, he's going to have to, he was brought in to contribute something. And I think that's something, one of those big somethings is offense. Maybe it's on the power play. You know, Leo doesn't play on the power play, that kind of thing. So, I mean, if he ends up playing on the power play and helping there, then that's fine. Then that's okay. He doesn't necessarily score at even strength. But I feel like that's one thing that does kind of worry me. And like you said, we'll get to a lot more worries kind of in the second half. So that's one thing that kind of worries me. And that brings me to Michael Dal Colle, who is down in Bridgeport now, did eventually sign, who I, you know, I'm not going to say I was surprised he wasn't picked up on waivers, but what a fascinating career this guy has had so far.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. Like, I feel like he has skills, and I feel like, you know, other people feel like he has skills that can help a team win on the ice. But the problem is one of those skills is not scoring goals. And that's unfortunate because he does a lot of other things that are pretty cool. And, you know, for a young guy, man, that's just not going to work. Like, you're going to put the puck in the net every once in a while, son. And, you know, I feel like Zach Parise gets a lot of leeway. Leo Komarov gets a lot of leeway. Michael Dal Colle will not get that kind of leeway.
No.
So he's in Bridgeport now. And maybe he can find his scoring stroke, and I hope he can, because I think the Islanders can use him. I mean, who couldn't use a, you know, early 20s forward, again, who can play like he can?
It's if more people were paying attention and kind of really sunk their teeth right into the Islanders, I really wonder who they think would have who's had a more kind of peculiar start to their NHL career between him and Aho. And I was joking with you earlier, like, can you imagine Zdeno Chara and Sebastian Aho, like, just having a meal together and Zdeno Chara being like, yeah, so, like, tell me about, like, how did you just come over from Europe this year? Like, what's your deal? And he's like, no, I've actually been here. you know, if you look up there, see that press box, you know, I spend most of my time there. I've played one game last year, scored a goal, and then didn't play again. And that was kind of the situation I was in also the year before. But this year, I'm probably going to be doing that again, it seems. But, like, and then you got Dal Colle, who, like you said, he does have a skill set. And I think he might be a little bit unfortunate. He's a little unfortunate, weirdly, that the fourth line exists, because I think his perfect spot on this team is Cal Clutterbuck's spot. He's a great forechecker. He's very defensively responsible. He can't score. I mean, if Cal Clutterbuck has more offensive upside than you, you're probably in trouble. Like, but that's probably his spot. Like, he's kind of perfect for that fourth line role, because he's a big body, and maybe he does have offensive upside that has just never come to be. But I'm pretty sure we can say at this point he doesn't. But he's another guy that he's been around for a while now, and he's also been overshadowed a little bit by Hosang, because Hosang's career path, and like we're talking about two first round picks that didn't work out, and one took a very serpentine route to play for the Toronto Marlies, and Michael Dal Colle's route has been a lot less dramatic, I guess. Is the best way to put it, and he's just still here. So there's definitely something there. I don't know, like, what. I have no idea what the answer to this is. I wonder how many NHL games Michael Dal Colle has played in his career. Because you could tell me 58, or you could tell me 130, and I would believe, or 220, and I'd believe any of them. Because I feel like he plays, you know, play two games. Then he also has been got, he gets hurt too. Like, he does seem to pick up, like, injuries here and there.
I'm looking up at the end of the show. So everybody take a guess. Don't look. Don't cheat. And at the end of the show, we'll give the answer, and you can, you know, check against yourself how close you were and be like, either, damn, that was way off, or wow, that's, you know, X more than I thought or less than I thought. So,
but it's just, he's an interesting, like you said, like, right, what a career path. And this is the point I think I was saying, I don't know if it was last show or the one before that, but the team is much deeper below the surface organizationally than it's ever been. I think that's what Lou was kind of referring to as well. It's like, you know, Michael Dal Colle is being, as the 15th forward, is that's a pretty good situation to be in. Right. So, and same with Thomas Hickey in the eighth spot. So, and that's why I think, you know, it's funny, we're night before the season starts, and who have we spoken about so far? We're talking about Erik Gustafsson, Sebastian Aho, and Michael Dal Colle. But I think it just goes to show you kind of just know what the other guys are,
right?
Like, the guys who are already on the team. But like,
the these top guys two are, lines have been set this entire time, and the fourth line has been set this entire time too.
Right,
and 2/3 of the third line are basically set too. So, you know, that's what it comes down to. But that's like you said, that's where they're deepest, particularly on defense and And, you know, even in goal, like, you know, Varlamov being out is not good. Like, let's be honest, but we all know who's going to get the start. It's going to be Sorokin. And the fact that Schneider is here, okay, that's just how it's going to be. So, again, there wasn't a ton of intrigue when it came to this stuff other than, like, you know, the paper transactions and things like that. So, but yeah, I agree with 100%. Like, if more people were paying attention, how much, like, Del Col would definitely be getting the sort of the treatment that Hosang got, which is like, why don't they just give this guy a chance? It's like, well, he's had a bunch of chances and he hasn't scored all that much. So that's the problem. But yeah, but at the same time, like, I wouldn't mind seeing him out there. Like, I do, I kind of want to see him out there more and seeing what he can really do. He might just be one of those guys, like, baseball has a lot of guys like this where, like, it's like, oh man, I just want to see what he can do. Meanwhile, he's like 29 years old and it's like, I think we know what he can do, but Michael Del Col, not 29, just for the record.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got a lot. Oh, the other thing too, real quick, as I talk about Del Col, and we talked about Bellows before, another guy who, you know, could get, well, he's with them now. So maybe he gets into a game or whatever at some point. The funny thing about them signing all those contracts, Schneider too, Parisi, Chara, they all fit into the same bucket. Although Chara and Parisi got a lot more performance bonuses. They all got 750 grand, like, base contracts, which is, I guess, the minimum these days. And so you do wonder, like, what was the holdup? If you're going to give everybody the same contract anyway, what took so long? It's not like, you know, one guy got a little bit more, a little bit less. They all got essentially the same contract, except for, again, the two older guys, a lot of performance bonuses that, like, Andy Green probably will carry over into next year. But I did think that was funny. Like, we waited all this time and all these guys were moved around. All these chess pieces got moved around. And you look at Cap Friendly and it's like, everybody's got the same exact number next to their name. It's kind of weird.
That is funny. So. Corey Schneider will be the him and Nathan Gerby as the highest paid players in the AHL this year when they're in the AHL. I saw it.
Wow.
Saw that tweet come across.
How about that? Yeah. Islander killer, Nathan Gerby.
Yeah, I know. $500,000 just to come up for just a couple games a year, score two goals each one of them against Corey Schneider and then go back down.
100%. So, well, he's earned it. He's earned that money there. Who is he even with now? Is he still with Columbus?
I assume he's either on Columbus or Carolina. Whenever you look up and he's just on one of those teams.
Yeah. It'll definitely be a team in this division.
And he'll be a player that's like traded at the deadline too. Like, it's like to a team that's like, yeah, they traded for, I don't know, some Jack Eichel, but they also got Nathan Gerby just as a throw in to make the numbers work. You're like, oh, Jesus.
Nathan Gerby and Tyler Ennis. You can't convince me that they're two different people. They're just, it's like a talented Mr. Ripley thing. Like, they're just the same guy with just different names, you know?
And they also, like, Tyler Ennis too, he just bounces between teams that he's already played for. Like, I mean, he's on the Senators again. Like, dude, how many times we got to play for the Senators?
Yeah. Yeah. We should, you know what? We'll take a break here. I do want to talk about the Senators real quick at the very end, because they have their own contract thing going on. Maybe it gets solved by the time we talk about this, but that's as good a spot as any. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what we're all in for this year, which is rooting for a team that is being expected to challenge for the Stanley Cup, which is something that very, very few of us listening to this have had experience with, unless you watch this team essentially as an adult back in the 70s. But anyway, we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll get all that out on the table. All right. So join us in a couple of seconds. Thanks. Our favorite sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. They got hats. They got jerseys. And in fact, their Columbus Ice jersey was just, Cincinnati Ice jersey was shown at the Columbus Blue Jackets game, which is really, really cool. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirts, and you can get one there, and our portion of which goes directly to the Center for Dementia Research. And they also have a Lighthouse 15 code that you can use to save yourself 15%. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Okay, so we've teased this now, and it's time to get this out. The Islanders have been, for the most part, predicted to be either a Stanley Cup finalist or the possible Stanley Cup champion by, I would say, a fairly, you know, noticeable number of outlets so far. ESPN ran their predictions. I think it was maybe like half a dozen people picked the Islanders. Over at the New York Post, Larry Brooks picked the Islanders over the Avalanche. Molly Walker picked the Avalanche over the Islanders. Other people have picked the Islanders. I was reading the previews over at Defending Big D today, which is our SB Nation's Stars blog, and they all had great things to say about the Islanders. Basically, it's either Islanders or Carolina winning division. Somebody said this might be their year. I'm sure there are others, even at the Athletic, where everybody hates the Islanders except for Arthur Staple. Some people have picked them to win. So this is a big year, and this is the first time in my memory that the Islanders have been in this kind of conversation. Obviously, you know, nobody can predict the future. We don't really know. But like, this is a whole big thing. And my big worry, just to get things started, is that it's going to make every mistake and every loss seem monumental. Like, you know, if they come out on Thursday in Carolina and lose, however they lose, whether they look good, they look bad, they lose in overtime, losing shit, whatever, to me, it's going to weigh a lot more, because this is a team that is expected to go that far, and any loss could be the first in a string of losses, I guess, is what I'm worried about. And just having those expectations, like, what does that even mean? Like, what happened? Like, you just kind of have to follow along for the ride, but then we don't know where that ride's going to go. I mean, that's, I guess, the way it is, but it's just a very weird thing. And to know that everybody's kind of coming after you, like, that's the thing too. I mean, the players know what they're saying. Barry Trotz mentioned it in his availability. The other players on the other teams know what they're saying. Oh man, here come the Islanders that, you know, are gunning for the cup. So this is a very different kind of season than we've experienced in a long time. It used to be like, well, maybe they might be pretty good this year, or they're not going to be that good this year. This is a team that is good, isn't good enough. This is, you know, yeah, Stanley Cup final or else bust this year. And that is very, very, very strange to wrap your mind around when you think about it, you know?
I like that it's that's the feeling of it, because you would assume on the outside looking in that you'd think, oh, the fans, they're going to be thrilled to see the Islanders being picked and stuff. Whereas no, it's been so long that the general feeling of this fan base, which one thing that's great about being an Islander fan is that, yeah, we like, there's some certain things maybe we disagree about. Hey, you might think Michael Delcole is a better fit for the third line than Leo Komarov or whatever, but for the most part, like, in terms of the big picture, everyone's on the same page with this team. And so, like, the feelings are very much mutual. Like, so as you weren't alone, like, in thinking that, oh man, whoever, David Amber picked the Islanders to win the Stanley Cup on Hockey Night in Canada, that makes you feel a certain way, and that the way that it made you feel, also, it also made the other thousands of Islander fans feel the same way, which is like, we're like, okay, like, we understand, but we also need some time to kind of comprehend this, because it's, yeah, I'm 31 and this has never happened to me, for sure. And it's like, I was just, while you were talking, going, trying to be like, when, at what point did the Islanders have their highest expectations preseasons in my life? And I'm guessing it was maybe, you know, maybe last season, but, you know, pre-Trotz, then going back, and maybe the second season under Laviolette when I
was, that's what I was gonna say,
13. Yeah. So like, you're talking 2002, 2003, when maybe the last time people were picking them to make a run.
But even then, I don't remember people saying, this is a cup contender. It was more like a second round kind of thing. You know?
Right. And they were still, it was still a team, like, hockey, first of all, was very irrelevant back then. Like, even more so now. Like, it was, it was on ESPN, but it was a joke. And it was every day we were just hearing about how ESPN couldn't wait to get out from underneath the NHL. And, and you'd read like Newsday. That's how you got your news. You get your Newsday article every day, and the Newsday writer would even pick the Islanders to make a run. It's a very new experience, and it's pretty heavy as a fan to deal with, because, like you said, like, now the Islanders, there was never the possibility of coming up short for the Islanders in our lifetime. Coming up short in 2013 meant something very different. It meant, oh man, Jesus, the Islanders got demoted. They got relegated to the AHL. That's basically the only way they could get they could come up short, you know, with the roster they were rolling out back in the early part of the last decade. And then you got now coming up short, like you said, is they lose, they miss the playoffs by a point in a really tough division. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
If they lose game six of the Eastern Conference semifinal, that's also kind of unacceptable. And that's, yeah, it's some pretty heavy stuff. And, it makes the watching the regular season much, much more of like a harrowing experience, for sure.
And like, I was watching that Penguins Lightning game last night, the first game of the season. And I told you, I didn't even really want to, but I mean, it was on. So like the reflex is like, I'm going to watch this now. And the Penguins played really, really well. And they won, I believe they won like, it was like 5-2 or something like that, or 6-2. But like they got a bunch of empty net goals because Cooper pulled Vasilevsky really early, and they ended up scoring like, I don't know, 3 empty net goals. But regardless of whatever the final score was, they played really, really well, and they beat the Lightning, and the Lightning didn't play well. Sometimes it happens in these banner raising ceremonies or whatever. And my first thought was, ugh, what if the Penguins are going to be good this year? Then they're going to freaking beat the Islanders. They're going to play the Islanders again in the playoffs, and they're going to win. And it's like, I've already had to hear people talking about like, well, the Penguins outplayed the Islanders in that playoff series. If they got a save, they would have won.
That's a big like theme all of a sudden. And when I say big, I mean, I've heard like 4 different people on media sources, and hell, maybe like there were some games where the Penguins, like game 5 was
right.
The game.
One and five.
Yes. The Islanders got outplayed in game 5. They got outplayed in the first 2 periods of game 1.
Hmm.
But
yeah,
have they ever watched playoff hockey before? Yeah. Like it's like
game 6, which was the final game, was all Islanders. Yeah. Like the Penguins never even got above the mat.
Game 4 was, and game 3 was just a wild one. So it was like, I don't know where that all of a sudden just started popping up. And who is it? Lemieux? Like, is someone just Brian Burke? I don't know who it is.
We're going to talk about, well, we talked about Jeff Merrick before, but it was Rick Tocchet on Jeff Merrick's show. And all of a sudden it became like a talking point that this is like a thing now. And then a couple of guys mentioned it on The Athletic too. And it's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if dominated is really quite the word you want to use when you guys, when they lost pretty good in game 6, like that was not a contest then in that game. So, but anyway, in any event, like this is the kind of stuff that is going to race through my mind every single day. And so again, they're starting with the Carolina Hurricanes, a team we haven't seen since, all last season and the season before, and who the Islanders have never really had too much luck against. That's going to be like a huge thing. And then, you know, they were already going to Vegas early this season. They're playing in Arizona, where they've won like once in the last whatever 30 trips or whatever it was, going back to the 1990s. So it is going to make harrowing is a good way to put it. And I don't know. And I, you know, what are we going to be like by the time the playoffs roll around? Are we going to be like basket cases? I don't know. This is a whole new world, to steal a phrase. And I don't know. It's. And other people have said this, and we've said this too, like when your team has nothing to lose and you're building, then it's almost fun. Like, because who cares? Like, yeah, you lose and it sucks, but at the same time, you didn't really have any expectations anyway, but now it's like a loss is huge. It's monumental. And you know, it's like, you know, every player has a spot that he's got to take up, and he's got to do this thing, and he's got to do this. And if not, you know, it's going to bother you. And I don't know how I'm going to deal with this all season long. I'll probably be just like beside myself every single game day, you know? Just...
Yep. Yeah, we sure will be. And I think a lot, one thing Barry Trotz said when he was first hired was how it would take time. And I think he said like a 5-year project of building a cup contender. And it's insane how prescient he's kind of been in a lot of different ways. But, that one, because anytime a new coach gets hired to any team in any sport, it's a big thing in soccer. Like they refer to projects now. They're like, oh, this is, I'm really excited about this project. We know Barry now that like, even when he does talk in coach speak and sports cliches, that he seemingly seems to believe in them, and that makes you believe in them. And, so it's almost funny that this has kind of been something they've been building towards. So I'm assuming he'll have them all prepared, but he doesn't talk to us, right? So like, it's a completely different thing. You know, Brock Nelson won't be freaked out last night during the ESPN broadcast, like when Sean McDonough, who I think his name is, right? The guy who does Monday Night Football, used to do, is now on. And he just kind of mentioned in passing how good the Islanders were. And talking about the Metro Division, I'm like, here's someone on ESPN talking about the Islanders like, being good, like it was nothing. Like, and usually, like, when that happens, it'd be like, how about the look what's going on with the New York Islanders? Like, this is nuts. Like, this team isn't supposed to be good. It came off his tongue extremely naturally. I, of course, lost my mind. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. Jesus. I remember that part because he was talking to Ray Ferraro and I had actually, I had to take my daughter to dance. And just before they came back, one of the guys mentioned like, oh, you know, throw back to Ray Ferraro. And I was like, Islanders legend, Ray Ferraro. So one of the great Islanders of the '90s scored a lot of huge playoff goals. I mean, she could care less, but I was like, yeah, that guy's a legend. I love Ray Ferraro, you know, but two things though. I'm glad you brought up Trotz because it's two things that I noticed about this related to him. During one of Zdeno Chara's many media availabilities, which again is something he gets, not a lot of other Islanders get, but he mentioned that, you know, the coaches said like, nobody's going to hand us anything. Like, we're not just going to sort of waltz and skip our way to the Stanley Cup finals. Like, we got to go out there and battle for it. And the fact that he said that coming here, as the new guy, quote unquote, new guy, that kind of made me feel better because that means that Trotz has been talking about this. Char has been talking about this. You know, Anders Lee has been talking about this. Everybody's always on the same page. Lou, obviously, too. And so that made me feel better that they kind of other people in that locker room understand that this is going to be a journey and this is going to be hard. And this is not going to be an easy thing, no matter how many people predicted you to win this sort of thing. But the other thing is Lou, today, Andrew Gross asked Lou. And I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's worth being asked, but at the same time, it didn't need to be asked. Andrew brought up that Barry Trotz is a free agent at the end of the year and have, you know, asked if there had been any, what's that?
I said, oh God.
Yeah. He asked if he had been any extension talks. And Lou was like, that will be kept in house amongst us. But I mean, Barry Trotz isn't going anywhere. Like, this guy, whatever he wants, the owners have to just give it to him. Whatever he wants, there's no cap on coaches. There's no, like, you know, negotiating over whether or not we did this or anything. To compare what these guys were like before Trotz and are now under Trotz, I mean, it's like night and day. It's two completely different teams. And, like, the fact that we're even coming into year four of Trotz and Lamoriello is, like, mind-boggling. Like, oh, my God, what the hell? How did we even get here? And so I just thought that was really funny too. And I'm like, whatever this guy wants, just give it to him. And I can't imagine that the guys who are shelling out $1 billion to build a brand new stadium for this team, all of a sudden going to start, like, you know, kind of wondering, weighing options and pros and cons about extending Barry Trotz at the end of the season. Like, I'd be very surprised if that's the case. Because again, this team is here now because in large part to him, not just him, but like, without him, they would not be here right now. So just give it to him, whatever he wants.
I you obviously know if you listen to the show that I watch a lot of old Islander YouTubes, and I love watching games from that same Laviolette era that I was referring to, or even the one after that. And a lot of times when I watch those games now, I was watching game two of the Penguins series in 2013, which they won. They scored three goals from shots that hit off the backboards that pop back up. I think it was like Oposo had one, Martin. But the whole time I watch these games now, I'm so Trotzified that I'm like, whoo, Barry would be so mad at that pinch by Brian Strait right there. Like, you can't, or like Mark Streit's gap is like way off. Like, he can't let that guy get that pass across the slide. Like, that's, you know, breaking the cardinal rule of Islander hockey. And then I realize, oh, well, that was Islander hockey back then. Like, there were no rules. Now there are a lot of rules.
Another great thing about the ESPN broadcast is Brian Boyle scored for the Penguins, and Emily Kaplan of ESPN, who was between the benches, was, you know, talking about him and how he played for Team USA at the World Championships this year. And she mentioned that she talked to Jack Capuano, who was his coach there. And I was like, I remember him. I was like, and it was this very weird moment, like, wow, that was a lifetime ago. And it wasn't a lifetime ago. It was 5 years ago.
Yeah,
it felt like a lifetime ago.
It's a completely different era. And I've never felt between Scott Gordon and Jack Capuano or Steve Sterling and Peter Laviolette, there's never been a feel. It's never felt different. Right. It's always been like, yeah, this team is going to probably suck, and if they don't, I'll be pleasantly surprised. But I just really hope that that they're still on Long Island in the morning. Yeah, like, you know, that's basically it. Like anything more than that is kind of gravy. So now, now it just does feel, it feels so completely different. Right.
And I think a lot of that, cause I'm thinking about that too. Cause I mean, I go back even further than you, and like starting with like Milbury, really, you know, everybody was kind of shades off a different tree, you know, like they're all kind of the same. Laviolette obviously being the huge outlier there. And they had that huge run, you know, that, you know, that big sort of growth spurt there with the money spent, and that led to like that one great season. But then after that, he was around for, what was it, 3 more years? He was let go. Team was basically the same, just with Steve Sterling, and they didn't really play all that different under him. He was gone. Gordon was there. Then they tore it all down. And so you have these sort of phases where the team is mostly the same. The results are mostly the same. The guy behind the bench is different, but, you know, it's whatever. The results really don't change all that much. Trotz has been a completely different. This is a different animal. Like this guy, you know, taking the same exact roster that missed the playoffs 2 years ahead before and going to the playoffs and then going to the semifinals. It's like, the guy's a magician. Like, I don't
know. And you think you also, like, I think this is another reason why just remembering that you have him in this, in these dark days of being a Stanley Cup contender is that can you imagine the Islanders coming into a season with these kind of expectations and being like, all right, Jack, you gotta make this one work. Like there's very little you have to worry about with Barry. And I think it's so funny because even the things that you do worry about him putting Leo Komarov at the first line or whatever, that kind of stuff. It's not stuff we all just accept it. Like we laugh about it at this point and find the humor in it. And the fact that he is guiding the ship through the choppy waters of high expectations is definitely, it just really, really helps you sleep at night. And guess what? If he's a little unsure of himself, the guy he goes to advise is Lou Lamoriello, who's the president of the Islanders still somehow. And it's just pretty amazing. You got to like scratch your eyes and like still get wide eyed about it. And then you'll see Barry on the bench tomorrow and be like, all right, yeah, he's here. He's got us. This generation of this whole era has changed the way I look at the sport too. And, cause you hear, when you listen on a podcast, you'll hear, you know, Elliot Freeman talking about, you know, the Flyers, they brought in Keith Yandel because he's such a good person in the room. And pre-Trotz, I would really kind of scoff at those notions. But now, like with the way this team has built and the success and how they've achieved their success, I really don't. Like I understand that kind of value does matter. That kind of stuff actually does really help. And that's why, like, bringing someone like Chara, when has Zdeno Chara been on a team that didn't have Stanley Cup aspirations? It's been like, what, 15 years for him? Yeah.
Even back to Ottawa.
Yeah. Like you got to think it's probably when he got traded from the Islanders was probably the last time.
Right. Yeah.
So like you bring in the guys like Zach Parise too. Like this is a guy who's been on some good Devils teams and he's been with the Wild and he's always been the guy who's supposed to take him places. But so he's always had a pressure on his shoulders. Andy Green is like the same way. Like, Corey Schneider, like these, even like these guys have been around these kind of situations before where, you know, if this was a few years ago where these aspirations were coming and you're like, all right, who do we look to for guidance when we do lose 3 in a row and people are starting to call us, you know, a bust, is it, you know, who do we look for? Because it's in this room, you have like 7 different candidates. So that stuff does kind of matter. It does make you feel a little bit better about the whole thing too.
Oh yeah, definitely. And actually, I'm not sure what made me think of this. It might've been during Friedman and Marek's like preview episodes, but it did occur to me that, again, not just the Islanders, but in other teams and stuff like that, if you go back, it really does make you realize just how much we've been bullshitted over the course of these years. You know, like we get bullshitted a lot and that's just the nature of the beast. Like it's just kind of how it is. You're a general manager of a coach or a player of a team. You got to sell hope, right? Like you got to sell, you know, you got to get people in the building. You got to get them excited for your team. And that means just basically bullshitting them into being like, no, no, they're going to be good this year. I feel like we can take the next step, take the next level. You're not going to take the next level or take the next step until you take that next step. Like that's the thing. And like, we've been told ad nauseum before trots about how this was going to be the next step, go to the next level. These guys were about to bring it. They were going to, you know, break out, and they never did. You know, they got a little bit better. Maybe one guy played okay. Another guy took a step back. Another couple of guys played all right. This guy got traded because he didn't want to be here anymore. Like, trots came in and they did go to the next level and they did take another step. And so I think about stuff like, you know, oh, they had to change the culture in the room. Again, not like an Islanders thing, but like they got to change the culture. Okay, well then change it. Like if it's not changed, then it's not changed. And I know that sounds very, you know, very black and white, but it is funny to me how we have witnessed that culture change and that next level taken, and all the other stuff that we got told beforehand was just bullshit. Just complete bullshit.
That theory or that feeling come to life is when they had that playoff run to the playoffs in 2007 with Ryan Smith and whatever. And then all those guys left. Kozlov, Pody.
Right, yeah.
And then how did they sell hope? They put Bill Guerin, Ruslan Fedotenko, John Sim, and Mike Conry on a bridge at like the Westbury Manor and took a picture of them. We're like,
yeah,
look at our big ticket free agents, everybody. The Islanders are back. And So that picture to me, that's exactly, I look at that picture all the time, and that picture is exactly what you're saying. Like that was the Islanders trying to sell hope to a fan base can see kind of right through that stuff. Be like, because someone probably look at that picture is like, damn, I was at a wedding at that place last night. They already flipped it over.
I think I was thinking about like the Oilers, who have, you know, 40-year-old Mike Smith in goal, and it's like, you know, we gotta take the next step this year. It's like, do you though? Like, are you with Mike Smith in goal? Really? Is that what you're gonna do? But I don't know. So, but yeah. So, you know, these and many. I don't think this will be the last time we talk about, you know, the balancing act of following a team with Stanley Cup hopes when, you know, you've been following the same team with almost no hope for a very long time. But you know, here it is on the eve of day one of game one. Against a, you know, pretty darn tough opponent. A lot of people are picking the Hurricanes to win this division too. So I mean, the Islanders don't get an easy start. They got the 13-game road trip. They're all over the damn place. They're playing some really, really tough places, really, really tough teams. Again, they got to play in Vegas. They got to play in Columbus, who, you know, maybe the roster's not that great, but that building has never been a great one for the Islanders. I'm pretty sure they got to play the Panthers, the Lightning a couple times. It's a whole thing, but yeah, so. Here we go. We got to be ready. Like I always say, we're all in the same boat here. So we all kind of want the same thing. And the Islanders want that thing too.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all, I mean, we're all terrified, but one other way to kind of calm yourself down is to like this team in these kind of choppy waters is think about that Bruins series that they kept such a level head that when they blew that lead in game five, I think it was, or game two, one of the games where they ended up winning in Boston, but it was a Josh Bailey like minor mistake that led to a sequence of events that ended up in the back of the Islanders net. And if you remember that NBC Sports like flashed right to Bailey on the bench to see if they'd get like a reaction out of him or whatever, like, you know, maybe it'd see him like cursing and being like, ah, shit, like I screwed up, and like, or like tapping someone on the shoulder, but he just was so deadpan, straight looking straight ahead. And that's just what this team is. They are, that's, you know, whether they're the Stanley Cup favorite, whether they're where they are now in the mid tier, or whether they're going to be a team that everyone counted out from 4 years ago, they're just going to look exactly like Josh Bailey did. They're just kind of doing their own thing, focusing on what they need to focus on. And like, it's so funny because the stuff that we are worrying about is all like our own doing.
Yeah, it's all like, baggage.
It's, like, yeah, it's so funny. Because you think about like if this wasn't this team exactly, like the Oilers, for example, they're basically the same odds as the Islanders, but they have like a tangible thing to worry about, which is Mike Smith and whatever. And then you got like the Lightning. They just lost their entire third line. the Avalanche, like who knows with Darcy Kemper, like whatever. Whereas like for us, what are we worrying about? Just the crushing expectations of being a contender for the first time in our lives. Like that's it. Not much else.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah, it is a funny perspective when you look at it that way, but that's what we do. That is what we do here. If you're new here, welcome. But anybody that's been listening this whole time, you know, that's what we do. Okay. A couple other things to really get to real quick. So last night's games were the first on ESPN in 17 years, right? Tonight's are the first on TNT ever, I believe. I don't think the NHL has ever been on TNT. You know, it was interesting watching the ESPN broadcast. They had a cool little featurette in the beginning on the guy who composed the iconic music. I did find it funny that they talked to some players who were like, oh, man, I love this music. And then they talked to some younger guys who were like, what is this, the Olympics? I never heard this song before. You know, it's like, way to hammer home that you guys didn't literally mention this entire sport for 17 years. Like, I don't know if this you think this makes you look good, but the fact that, you know, the sport was never mentioned on the channel for that long is a little bit weird. But they had Steve Levy on the desk with Barry Melrose, of course, Mark Messier, Chris Chelios. And then the call in the first game was Sean McDonough with our friend Ray Ferraro. And then the other game, the Vegas-Seattle game, which ended up being a pretty cool game, Linda Cohen and Kevin Weeks, another former Islander, on the desk. And then John Buchagras and Brian Boucher on the call. You know, to be honest, just to be blunt, Buchagras on play-by-play, maybe not his strong suit. Just my opinion. You know, it was an ESPN broadcast. Like, they had a bunch of talking heads, not really saying a whole lot. Chelios and Messier talking about some high-sticking call from 1992 or whatever it was that Chelios, I guess, got away with against Messier. Barry Melrose. The favorite part was Levy saying to Barry Melrose, you used to coach here in Tampa Bay, didn't you? And Melrose being like, I told you not to bring that up. I thought that was kind of a funny exchange. But other than that, you know, it seemed pretty cool. It was a little few too many camera angles for my taste. But the camera angles themselves were pretty cool. But I mean, I'm not a fan of like sort of switching camera angles during the course of a game. But I don't know. What did you think? And what are you thinking about tonight for TBS or TNT? I'll probably watch the late game, not the early Caps Rangers game.
Yeah. First of all, yeah, camera angles. I have a thing where the Islanders have never scored a goal from a weird camera when the
feels cameras, that way.
Yeah, but they've let in a ton of them. So I never like the camera angle switch. It gives me anxiety. But I think what the vignette thing with the music. I thought I was like really ready to be like, oh, this is gonna be so cheesy and pandering. But it was much cooler than I thought it was going to be. And I did appreciate at least that they like if they switched roles, like if NBC Sports was getting hockey back after 15 years, they wouldn't even acknowledge that it went away and came back, because that's just how they are. They operate like everything's very press releasey corporate with NBC Sport broadcast. But ESPN, I know it's like very Disney and NFL-y, and so I could see through that stuff, and I am a cynic like that, but I did appreciate that they like mentioned that, like it's been 17 years. Cause you know, and I think Steve Levy even said thanks to NBC Sports for like basically babysitting.
Yeah, he said they did a great job.
Yeah. He's like, thanks for keeping the sport warm till it made enough money and generated enough revenue for Mickey Mouse to get back involved. I love Ray Ferraro, first of all, so that was great. But the tangential stuff was so much better than anything NBC Sports has ever done. Like, you can just tell the budget is probably so much bigger, and like the creative force behind these broadcasts will be just so much better than anything NBC Sports could have done. And through whether it's their fault or not, like it's just you can watch an NBC Sports broadcast, we say this all the time, from 2014, and then you can watch one in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup in 2018, and it'll look the same. And it's so clear that they make it clear that this channel, this league, was never really a huge priority for the company, I guess. But it's because they noticed everyone above beyond. But ESPN, it did seem like they did put some oomph behind it and some thought into it. And yeah, I mean, there is the actual broadcast, like you said, Jambucci grass is not my favorite. And there's going to be a lot of people who are on these broadcasts that aren't going to be not my favorite. So I just got to get over that, I guess.
Yeah. I thought McDonough was all right.
He's I like him because he's just does what he's supposed to do.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's very like he's not quite as excitable as either Forslund, the man of a thousand catchphrases, or of course the great Doc Emrick. And Levy mentioned at one point that this was their first broadcast without Doc since like 1981 or something, because he worked there so long. So, I agree with you about the budget, and you know, I think there's going to be a lot of creativity kind of utilized and stuff like that. You know, that might be like a sort of a first time through the order scenario where like the first time around, everybody gets kind of something cool, and then it's kind of settles into the same old after.
But I think about like College Game Day. I don't know how many people like love college football. I really enjoy college football and the pageantry of it. And College Game Day is awesome to watch in the morning. Like in between soccer games or something, I'll put it on. It's like, cause they really lean into the culture of the sport and stuff.
Yeah.
And if you do that, like with their broadcasts, we do make fun of American a lot on the show, but one thing that they do say, or they have said recently, which is very poignant, which is that these teams like Nashville, whatever, like they need to market to their fan base. Like Nashville shouldn't market to what a hockey fan should look like, because that's what the Canadian media says. Like, oh, this is what a hockey fan is. No, this is what a Nashville Predator is. Like, this is who we market our game ops for and our promotions. Like Vegas, that's why Vegas is so successful, because it feels Vegas. So as long as they do inch towards making it feel hockey and not like what NBC Sports did, which made you like could have been watching that from a meeting room, a conference room at your job, and because they will never offend anybody, and they give a presentation and maybe make a few the same jokes over and over again, ask you how the weather is, and then the meeting's over, you have a bagel, like this will be different, which that's all I'm hoping for, at least. Who knows with TNT? Like I was joking with someone at work today who isn't a hockey fan at all, and he said, you know what I'm gonna watch, I'm interested, because he loves he loves NBA, he loves TNT. He's like, Wayne Gretzky, like why hasn't he been on other broadcasts? I was like, Wayne Gretzky is the perfect NHL best player of all time, because his personality is like as far from Shaq or whatever as possible. Like he's not gonna blow you away. He's gonna sit there. He's gonna maybe talk about the olden days, and that'll be that. Like his personality is not gonna blow you off the roof. And he's like, oh wow, like that. He was like surprised at that, because if someone's the best player ever, you assume that the kind of personality goes with it. But no, that's not the case. So I think that's the best way to look at it too. Is I don't think either of the talent, like the cast members, are probably going to be underwhelming for a long time. But at least like the cinematography and the other stuff should be much more interesting than what we've been used to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. Like, and if ESPN can sort of go on more road trips, I'm not expecting like a College Game Day setup. I'm not a huge college football fan myself, or college really anything fan myself, but you know, that it is kind of a sight to see when they go to like Auburn and, you know, they're on campus and the kids are all decked out in the clothes and they got the signs up and the mascots there. Like you can see that there is a respect and a fun level there that they have for that school and that sport and that game and that whole rivalry, whatever they're playing in. And if they can bring that to the NHL, that would be a huge step up from the NBC broadcast. Cause like we've always complained too, like NBC, they in the NHL came up with this idea of these outdoor games, which are fantastic, but every outdoor game is the same exact story. The kids growing up on the pond. But you know, how many of these kids really played on ponds? They played in rinks like you have in your neighborhood and I have in my neighborhood. Like they weren't out there on the pond. This isn't, you know, whatever, Rocket Richard out there on a Rideau Canal, like, you know, skating in the middle of winter. Like, come on, get out of here. But like, you know, they do it at All-Star games a little bit, but still, like, really not that much. They kind of shoehorn everything into the same cookie cutter. So if they can stop doing that, that'd be a huge leg up. And as far as TNT goes, you know, it's funny you mentioned Gretzky, because like there's a very famous picture of Wayne Gretzky as a little kid with Gordie Howe. And Gordie is like, he's got like a hockey stick kind of around his neck. And in a lot of ways, like Wayne Gretzky today is still the kid in that picture. He's just the guy. He has all of the records you could possibly want and statistically is by far the best player to have ever played in this sport, but he's still basically that kid behind Gordie Howe. Like, he's still sort of the custodian of the sport in a way. And that's what his job is. And he's very good at it. Is he going to be a good broadcaster? I don't know. In the preseason games, they had Rick Tocchet there. I wasn't particularly impressed with him either. Paul Bissonnette's going to be there, I guess, to like say crazy stuff, but like, is he going to do that? I don't know. Is he, you know, and if he does, like, is he going to get tired after a while? Anson Carter, I like. I feel like he can, he even said in one of those broadcasts, like, he feels like he can be a little bit more free in what he says. So I think he's pretty good. And Liam McHugh is fine. I think that's the one that'll take the most getting used to, because I think we're all kind of used to ESPN on a level at some point, but TNT is kind of a whole new animal. I've only really watched like Law and Order and now recently some AEW wrestling on TNT. So I haven't watched all that much on it in a very, very long time, but I am interested to see how it goes. Last thing real quick, again, one last thing about some old hockey players. You and I were joking about this before and talk about a team that has some very much lower expectations than the Islanders this year, the Ottawa Senators. Now it is Wednesday, October 13th. The Senators start play tomorrow. The Leafs and Habs are already playing tonight. And the Senators are without one of their better players in Brady Tkachuk, who is, I guess, technically, he won't be a holdout, I guess, until they play. But, you know, that's like 24 hours from now. And he hasn't signed yet. And he wants a shorter deal that takes him up to free agency or a longer deal to stay in Ottawa for a long time. I don't know. All I know is that I'm kind of tired of hearing about the Tkachuk family and how they know everything about the business and how they're into it. And this is mostly like a Jeff Merrick, Elliot Friedman thing. And you and I were both talking about this because we listened to it. But like,
oh my God, how many times do we have to hear Jeff Merrick say, how the Tkachuk family?
Like, what are these guys, like the Windsors or the freaking Vanderbilts? Like, just like they built this sport.
Are their they own not two- the most interesting family in hockey right now?
Oh my God. I just, yeah.
Can you shut up?
He's actually insufferable. They keep talking about the Tkachuk family, how they know the ins and outs of the business and how like, you know, they're ensconced. Okay. Keith Tkachuk is his dad, was a good player 20 years ago. Matthew Tkachuk is his brother, is a good player right now. Like, that's it. I don't know why we have to keep talking about these guys like they're, you know.
Like they're Gretzky. Like it's
they're Wayne Gretzky. Like, yeah.
That's, and it's that's just, the weirdest thing. And it's new, right? This is a new kind of.
It's a whole new thing. Again, it's a talking point that's now been, you know, kind of disseminated. Yeah, and my whole thing is, again, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is probably all a problem because Eugene Melnyk doesn't want to give the dude what he wants. Just give the dude what he wants. Just do it. It's really not that hard, you know, but that's where I kind of come out on it. And I'm a little tired of hearing about it. Just sign the guy to whatever he wants and just move on with life. And it's not that hard.
Amen. It's just, I don't, it's every time I hear it, like we listen to these podcasts all the time and they'll be like, and after this, we'll talk about the Senators. And he was like, oh God, I'm going to hear about how fascinating the Tkachuk family is. And no, I don't think so. I'm last thing I remember about Keith Tkachuk is I was pissed at him because the Thrashers got the 3 seed and they were playing the Rangers in the playoffs. And I'm like, oh, this is the easiest 3-6 matchup ever for the 6 seed. And because it was the Thrashers' first time ever in the playoffs. I think they got Tkachuk at the deadline maybe or before. And he was terrible during that series. And the Rangers walked right through him. So you could see that one coming. But I mean, I did like those powder blue jerseys they had with the Atlanta down one sleeve and not the other.
Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that series because when our discussion about broadcasters, we forgot to mention that Henrik Lundqvist is now part of the MSG broadcast. And it would not surprise me one bit to find him calling an Islanders game while the MSG, you know, just happens, quote unquote, happens to, you know, not give Islanders fans the Islanders broadcast. I'm obviously just kidding, but it's, it's a whole thing, and this just cracks me up.
That's gonna be terrible.
Yeah,
that's gonna be terrible. I was so excited that when he went to Washington, I was like, oh, finally, like get this guy out of my life.
Yeah, no, and now he's here.
Comes right back in. Yep, right back in.
The guy who really loses is Steve Valiquet because now he's got to sit next to this guy.
I know.
And in just his like ridiculous, ludicrous handsomeness, I wouldn't want to sit next to him. I would be like, I'm going to go behind the benches. I'll see you guys later. Just put me in a little box on the side of the screen. I don't even want to be here in the same room with this guy. So there you go. So there you go. Pay Brady Tkachuk. Don't watch Henrik Lundqvist on TV. Anyway, that's about it. I think we got everything. Enjoy the game.
You got to reveal how many games.
Jeez. I have
a guess in my head.
Okay. So the answer to our Geico trivia question, how many games has Michael Dal Colle played in the NHL in his career? The answer. What is your answer?
My guess would be 107.
You are remarkably close. It is actually 111 career NHL games for Michael Dal Colle.
All right.
4 years. He played 4, 28, 53 in 1920 and 26 last season.
What a
any, any
what
guess a guy. On how many points he has in that 111 games?
26.
Again, remarkably close. 21.
Wow, 21.
8 goals, 13 assists.
Oh my god, I was gonna guess 4 goals. My god, I can't remember a single one of his goals.
Yeah, he had one last year. I don't remember at all. So, well, there you go. So, congratulations if you got it right. 111 games played in the NHL for Michael Dal Colle. So, maybe we'll see some more this year. You never know.
Never know.
Again, enjoy the game. It's gonna be wild, no matter what happens, and hopefully we're all okay on the other side of this season. They do play again Saturday. I believe it's in Nashville, I want to say. And it's some weird, stupid start time.
Florida at 6.
Florida at 6. 6 yeah, I know it was some dumb start time like that. So, yeah, so don't miss that one. if you're sitting down at 7 o'clock ready to watch the game, you're like, wait, why are they in the middle of the second period? That's why. It's a 6 o'clock start. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. If you get a moment, you will want to look up Isles Fix. I mentioned last week our friend Joe started some new ventures. One of them is Isles Fix. It's a newsletter that comes right to your email inbox every day. It used to be Isles Blog. So if you followed Isles Blog already, you'll notice they changed their name to Isles Fix. But if you haven't, you could look it up. Sign up for the newsletter. It's free. You get all kinds of cool information and little, you know, blog posts and articles and stuff in there too. So you definitely sign up for it. I already have. And it's cool. And good luck to Joe and his guys for doing that. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lebowski. Read his work at Action Network. Are you doing any more podcasts this week? Or was that... That was today, right?
I'm going on a Carolina Hurricanes radio tomorrow. This guy, Adam Gold, has had me on a couple times previewing. Like, I'll go on preseason, then I'll go on pre-playoffs. And because I've always been high on the Hurricanes is from a betting value. And so we get along pretty well. And he likes to, you know, bust my chops about the Islanders. I like to bust his chops about the Hurricanes. And I think he's actually from Long Island originally.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be talking to him tomorrow. It's, I think, at 11. Cool. Yeah. It's fun. I really like going on his show, like, because it's fun to talk about a team that you have no emotional connection. I mean, I don't like the Hurricanes. That's my emotional connection to him. But, you know, like, be like, no. Like, I have no problem being like, no, I hate this guy. Like, you know. That's tomorrow. I don't know.
You can both talk about Doug Waite.
Yeah, Doug Wade. Yeah.
legendary Islander and Hurricane. So there you go. All right, well, that's cool. We'll check it out. I mean, if you can find it there, listen to Mike on that show right there. And we'll be back next week, and we'll talk about how the Islanders did in these first couple of games. All right, thanks a lot, and we will talk to you later. All right, bye-bye. And I'll write your name.